I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Folks, it's happened. For the first time in 24 years, the New England Patriots and the man that's on my t-shirt showing many different emotions, as we can all see, I'm going to tilt over here, is no longer the coach of the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick has left. I'm going to put the graphic up just because, look, there's only three words you can really say about the matter. So I got to ask you, how are you feeling?
Tough. It's been a tough 24 hours. Obviously, the news broke this morning. That was, you know, you can say you saw the writing on the wall. You saw it coming and all that. Doesn't make it suck any less. But, you know, it kind of is what it is. In a way, I'm glad it happened early, right? So, like, kind of work through it throughout the day. And by the time, you know, it's time to do the show, I'm not as pissy as I was earlier this morning. And I was pissy, but I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing good. I was kind of anticipating it. It's just so weird considering what's transpired over the last 36 hours now. Because, look, it was more the fact that he was fired and not like stepped away or mutual parting of ways, the fact that they just basically told him to get out. Mm-hmm. But then you have the Carroll stuff, which I know some people are like, you know, surprised, like not surprised by, but at the same time too, it's just like, it's the same element of surprise. And then the Nick Saban news drops. And that was a true bombshell because that one was not like, no one saw it coming. It's not like, you know, a Coach K thing where he was just like, I'm announcing like 24 from last year. No, this was just a full on, we're done here. And then I woke up and it's the first thing I see on Instagram. As soon as I see both of them speaking at noon, you just knew. You knew immediately what was coming. And then your message was the first one that I saw about the we picked an Elite Data podcast. So for those of you guys who don't know, we were waiting. I wanted to wait just to let everything from the year that was marinade, but we just ended up loading up and loading up and loading up, and now the guns are ready to fire the end zone militia does. But ultimately with the news, I'll say this too, and from a perspective of me with work, I got to watch the press conference in a 7-Eleven, and getting emotional in a 7-Eleven really was not on my 24 bingo card. So I'll just say this. I don't want to say it was time because I feel like there's two sections of Patriots fans right now. There are the ones that are saying weird stuff like, you're going to regret doing this. Some of them are even weirder being like, Jonathan Kraft's going to run this franchise into the ground once Robert dies, which I don't even want to think about that right now. Kraft's still 82 and healthy, I assume. Mm-hmm. And then there's a section of the fan base that's, it sucks. It's not as emotionally draining as Tom because Tom was so dragged out. I feel like if this wasn't announced until like a couple weeks from now, it would be worse. But with this whole news, it's just, we're ready to move on. We're ready to see what's next.
Yeah, I get that. I think I fall probably in the terms of the somewhere in the middle, really. It was one of those like, I understand it. I don't like it, but I understand it. I think with someone had posted like minutes ago, someone had tweeted on the timeline that this is, worse than when Brady left. And I don't know if I necessarily agree, but I know I don't disagree, if only because when Brady left, at least we had Bill. But when Bill left, it's like, damn, that's it, right? It's like a closing of the chapter, right? There's no one left from the dynasty run, right? We know that, or we suspect that Matthew Slater is going to hang them up in a matter of weeks at this point, and that will kind of shut the door. I think David Ange is probably the only holdover from the second, the second half of the dynasty. But as far as like that, been around for as long as I've been, it's weird. It's weird. So I think it's going to take some getting used to. But at the same time, I think there's a certain level of optimism that I have with regards to the Patriots. Like, okay, well, this sucks, but we get to see them do something a little different. That could be cool. That could be fun. And that's the optimist in me, just trying to, you know, keep things hopeful in a time where I'm like, damn, bro, this is terrible. And it, you know, we kind of see who they have in mind as far as the succession plan goes, and I'm sure we'll get to that. So it's not completely, you know, it's not like when Tom left and that, like, Tom left and everyone was like, well, is it Jarrett Stidham? Because they had, you know, they had nothing. So at least with, you know, Bill, you know, the mutually parting ways with the Patriots, at least the Patriots have a succession plan in place. So it gives you something to rally behind.
Yeah, that's the thing, because, and I'll say this too on the Brady note, for me, the Brady news is worse just because of when it happened, considering the world was in disarray, where it was just like a punch in the face on top of a punch in the gut, you know, where it's like, oh, hey, so we don't know what the hell is going to go on for, like, hey, you know, 2 weeks, close, everything's fine, which that was a long story. But this one now, it's kind of that closure where we saw it coming. With Tom, it was just, you know, the drag it out. He could stay. He could do this. He could do that. More than anything with all this, we need Apple TV to, like, release a doc now. I understand when they're releasing it and why they're releasing it. February 16th, right after the season, just to give football fans something to, you know, hold their head, hold on to. I know, obviously, spring football, you're a big fan of that. That's coming back in March, but...
March 30th, yes.
March 30th. But with the... That Apple TV thing, for everyone for years who was saying the stuff about who was it, who was in charge, the book I referenced by Jeff Benedict several times, everyone's going to find out, hey, what actually happened. So for us, and also say this too about the doc, I'm not going to get my hopes up because I'm one of the few people that enjoyed Swamp Kings thoroughly. I know some people were pissed off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like watching stuff like Major Wright talk about, instead of intercepting the ball, I'm going to go murder that man because I want to strike fear in their eyes. Yeah. So with this, it's like the same thing too, where I'm just interested to see it. And also I've seen stuff too where it's like they brought everyone. This one's not like the Swamp Kings one where they only brought back a select few players. This one, they just decided, hey, this seems like everyone from a 20-year history is going to come out of the woodwork to do this. But ultimately with the team... Part of me's scared and part of me's excited for what's next. Part of me's excited just because it's that new chapter in your life. It's that, hey, let's see what happens. But the scared comes from not exactly the whole welcome to hell thing, but it's just the scared of, are they going to be mediocre for the next X amount of years?
Yeah. And I mean, they've been mediocre the last couple of years, so I guess it's really not that big a change. But at least you had, you know, history to hang your hat on. Whereas with, you know, going forward, that history is not there. So if they are mediocre, they'll just be mediocre, right? With no, like, necessarily, you know, there's no light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. But I do think it'll be interesting. Obviously, this day was going to come regardless. Right? Everyone goes at some point. We watched Tom Brady leave, and once he left, it was clear that anyone could go. And the fact that Bill's going to continue coaching is, you know, that's of particular interest to me, simply because when Tom left, I remember, you know, and they'll deny it now because they're filthy, filthy liars. But I remember there was a section of Patriots fans who were like, well, it's okay because he's washed. And then he goes out and he wins the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. And everyone then, you know, about faces, and it's like, well, they shouldn't have ran him out the door. He's clearly not washed. And I'm like, well, I watched you say he was washed and then he won and now he's not washed. I wonder if, you know, if Bill goes to Atlanta, for example, and he takes them on a deep playoff run, or, you know, even to the Super Bowl, I don't really see it, but say that happens, I wonder how quickly people turn like, well, Kraft shouldn't have let him go, or they shouldn't have pushed him out, because that's kind of what people do, right? They have these ideas of like, this is how it should be, and the minute things kind of flip, they pretend they never said what they said, and that I find that to be so supremely annoying. So I'm curious to see, you know, with Belichick continuing to coach, how that looks. If he does go down to Atlanta, and I keep mentioning Atlanta because that's like the name that's most connected to Bill Belichick. But if he goes down to Atlanta and they pull out a, you know, 12-5 season and playoffs, and, you know, make it to, like, you know, the divisional round of the NFC Championship game, I'm curious to see how quickly people kind of recant, especially if on the flip side, you know, the Patriots don't do so well. I wonder how quickly people, you know, flip on that. But I don't think either stance is correct, right? Even as someone who doesn't love the Bill Belichick, you know, firing, you know, mutually parting of ways, I don't love the whole comparison, just hanging on. Well, we'll have to see what, if he does well, then it was a bad idea. Or if he does, you know, if he doesn't do well, it was a great idea. And it's like, well, no, right. We're just looking at all that in hindsight. It's really just more of, was it the correct call? It could have been, it might very well be, especially given that he's 72 years old and the Patriots look like they're in for a pretty deep rebuild, right? They need a quarterback. They need at least two offensive linemen. They need, I would say, three receivers. They need at least two tight ends. Like, it's a pretty lengthy rebuild coming. And you have to wonder if a 72-year-old coach was going to be around for the long haul, which I think is a fair criticism. But then there are people who just wanted him out just for the sake of change, like change for the sake of change. And I think those people are going to be in for a rude awakening, because those are the kind of people who say dumb things like, it can't get any worse. And I'm like, yes, it can. Like, it absolutely can. Like, if the thought of Patriots head coach Josh McDaniels fills you with dread, then you're conceding right there that it could indeed get worse.
Yeah. Well, for me, if they win 5 games next year, I'll celebrate it like the Super Bowl, because it's like, yes, we're better than 2023. So the bar, because that was the thing for me for next year. The bar was never going to be high. My ceiling was going to be like, you know, like what we saw from the Chicago Bears this year, you know, where, hey, they went from 4-13 to 7-10, where you see that improvement, but there's still some growing pains. There's some losses where, look, I mean, Darnell Mooney should know how to catch football, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, God forbid it fall directly, I mean, literally fall in his lap.
Yeah, literally in your hands. Yeah. Hail Mary. So you know what I mean? Like, they have that dynamic for them where it's just like, hey, if next year you steal a couple wins, you have some games that look suck to lose. Because like this year, the whole month of November, I would want every single one of those losses back. Those were just all painful losses in their own right. The Commanders game, where we made Sam Howell look like what everyone's hyping Drake May to be. The Colts game, which was just, we had to wake up early and go, bleh, and then watch Chad Ryland shank one against Tommy DeVito. So in theory with this team, it's, I agree with you on the rebuild stance, where I'm like, I couldn't see Belichick waiting for that. But my whole thing now has never been to like wait and see for next year. Next year is just like, hey, roll out what you can. I'm more worried about the guys that are free agents that would potentially want to follow Bill, like how KB, Duggar, Kendrick Bourne, because he's a prevalent one. Because Monday it was outside Gillette Stadium, hey, I wanna be back. And then now it's, hey, Bill, I'll go. Like, I may go where you go. So it's just this like weird dynamic. And if next year, I mean, if we're getting Kendrick Bourne being used better than Bijan Robinson, then God help us all. But but yeah, it's just, it's weird. But at the same time too, with Bill, there's two non-playoff teams I can see, and one's Atlanta and one's the Chargers. I would rather NFC, just so you don't have to deal with the return next year, because I don't want that circus coming back to town whenever it happens, because you know it's going to get drilled into the head. But the one thing I will say is, though, I do want to see him win a Super Bowl for one reason only, and that's to shut up the, was it Brady or was it Belichick?
Holy shit, yeah.
I want to shut that crowd up. And also, I'm going to say this to you, your Tom Curran was coming out a little bit there. Are we sure you're not playing Tom Curran today? Or
I like Tom Curran. I know he got a lot of shit this week. Generally speaking, I like him, but I know that folks were not happy about it. And then I thought it was, for as much as I like Tom, it was really weird the way like the media rallied around him. Like, yeah, our guy got it right. Get him his flowers. And I'm like, he's a reporter. He didn't come on. He didn't defuse a bomb. Relax.
He was speculating.
Yeah. And it worked out, and it's informed speculation, but a speculation all the same.
Yeah.
So that was weird. That was weird.
Yeah. And the only other thing too now is just watching. I'm sorry. Apart from how bad Sunday's game was, the fact that we had to hear Chris Myers say a million times, well, if you didn't hear, Jake Glazer said this.
That was annoying. Yeah.
That was annoying. The one saving grace with this team, though, is, look, having the third overall pick, which I've seen some people say, trade up with the Bears, or like get for Justin Fields. I'm like, no. Why would they do that? That's just setting themselves up for bad. BQBA. That's all I want, unless a kid from Ohio State is just sitting there in their lap. That's the only exception. But I think he will be. He will be. But there's a part of me with the draft. I'm going to transition to that. There's two arguments in the draft. If they go Marvin Harrison, Penix may be there at 34, but I don't think he will be, because I know everyone's saying Monday. I'm going to say, Sue, that was a massive overreaction saying he blew his draft stock. I've never seen anyone's draft stock plummet. I'm just like, he had one bad game. If they lose the Sugar Bowl, he's a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lose a Sugar Bowl. He's a top 10 pick. So with New England, I'll say this right now, I want to focus on the offensive playmakers in the draft, and I'd rather get a lineman in free agency. You know, go out there and pay, not saying pay Juwan Taylor because he's a false start machine, but, you know, give that kind of contract out in free agency as opposed to drafting someone.
Yeah, go out there and get yourself a Jonah Williams. I think you do both. I think you need multiple linemen, right? You need starters. You also need backups. I don't think they have any quality NFL backup tackles, right? And most teams don't. But you have Calvin Anderson, who's been ill, and he's not really locked in, right? Like we can't just be like, oh, he's going to be back healthy and all that. I read earlier today he was hospitalized twice this past year. I knew about one. I didn't know it was twice. That's pretty insane. So we can't just assume he's going to be there. Bedarian Lowe can't play left tackle. That was very clear. Connor McDermott's like 38 years old. So I think they need to draft a tackle. But I also agree that they should probably go out and sign one, right? Get you a nice someone who can start and then get you someone you can develop. But I agree though, the offense needs an overhaul. I'm not breaking any news here. Mm-hmm. I do think though that the correct move is to go ahead and just get your quarterback, because I don't know that even if you're bad next year, I don't think it's guaranteed that you're top five bad, right? I think that's where it gets kind of dicey. And you know, who knows? You know, Quinn Ewers will be out in next year's draft. So like obviously that there's a high profile prospect right there. But I feel like every year everyone's like, oh, next year's class will be better. And at some point the better just has to come. Take the quarterback you have here. You take the quarterback now if you're in position to do so, right? You're picking third. I think quarterbacks go 1, 2 and then 3, right? I think it is a 3 quarterback class. As much as people don't seem to think it is, but there's a Heisman winning quarterback from the Bayou who is entering the draft. He's 23 years old. I'm sorry, that's going to be a top 10 pick, right? Like that people are deluding themselves. Well, he'll be there in the second round. I'm like, no, he won't be. That doesn't happen. Like that won't happen. And to your point, you mentioned Michael Penix Jr., whether or not he'd be available at 34. No, I don't see that happening either. I think he's someone who goes in the teens because teams need quarterbacks. And there's a lot of teams right now who need quarterbacks, even teams that we think are all set at quarterback. We know Washington needs one, even though they have Sam Howell and they started the year like, yeah, Sam might be the guy. He's not. Justin Fields in Chicago is a giant question mark. I think they're a team that very well may take, you know, Caleb at one, right? Or where's the second pick? I think 6, right? Where do they pick for themselves? It's 9. Okay, cool. They may take a quarterback at 9. I just don't think in that top half of that draft, to say the, you know, from 1 to 13, I can absolutely see 4 quarterbacks going, right? And that's just something that happened as a result of the NFL needing players at that position. So I think it's absolutely going to be a case where, you know, if you wait around to, oh, well, maybe get someone at 34, you're going to just end up missing out. I don't think you're going to find a starting quarterback in the second round. And I think history has shown us over, especially recent history in the last, like I'd say even 10 years, you're not finding a quarterback outside of the first round. Like it's just not really happening unless you catch lightning in a bottle with someone like Brock Purdy. It really doesn't happen all that often. You have the opportunity, take your quarterback, because at this point, the Patriots do not have a quarterback on their roster right now who you feel comfortable can go out there and not even win you a game, go out there and steady the ship, keep you in it as it goes, right? We saw what Bailey Zappi was. We saw Mac Jones, turn into a turnover machine. And Nathan Rourke, I mean, come on, let's be real here. So if you can take your quarterback, especially because I do honestly believe, like philosophically speaking, you can find wide receivers anywhere, right? And that's not to say like they're not important. It's just it's a lot easier to find you a nice wide receiver than it is to find you a nice quarterback. You can go out and trade for T. Higgins. You can't just go out and trade for exactly. And he's a free agent, even to boot. Although I wonder if he gets franchise tagged and then traded, which is why I said trade for him. But you have Brandon Ayuk, who will also be a free agent. You know, these kind of players will or could potentially be available. There are no quarterbacks who are going to come available that you're like, yes, go out and get him. It's going to be like Russell Wilson and then a bunch of guys who, you know, who've been bouncing in and off, on and off of practice squad. So take your quarterback, worry about, you know, playmakers elsewhere, especially because you can find, the inverse of my first point of like, oh, it's really hard to find a quarterback outside of the first round. It's not that hard to find a wide receiver outside of the first round, right? We see, you know, players like Michael Pittman Jr. was a second round pick. Then he
was a free agent.
Right. Like these are guys who are available. You know what I mean? You'll be able to find them there. Take your quarterback and figure out the rest from there, because quarterback is the most important position in sports. Like, singularly speaking, it's the most important position in sports. If you don't have one, you need one, go out and get one. Don't get cute on it. Oh, we'll wait till next year, because what happens if next year you're now 6-11, right? And now you're picking just outside of the top, top five. You're picking like 8 or 9. You're now in a position where I now have to decide if I'm going to trade up and go get a guy or take whatever guy falls to me. And the Patriots already did that whole let's wait around and take the guy who falls to me, and they ended up with McCorkle. So, and again, this is someone who, generally speaking, I kind of liked Mac. So,
I mean, I did too. My one game of Gillette was me wearing a McCorkle jersey. I was a McCorkle. I'm a McCorkle fan. It's just eventually it was the Colts game where I was just like, yeah, enough's enough. Like, pull him out.
Same. From there, I was like, oh, well, this just can't keep happening. Way he threw that interception, I was like, oh, yeah, this guy needs to sit. Like, it is. Yep. It's over.
And I just love the whole putting on pounds of muscle. And there's a TikTok of his girlfriend constantly feeding him cookies. So I'm just like, how much muscle are you really putting on there, buddy? I'm a bigger guy. I'm a bigger guy. So I really can't comment on that. But at the same time, too, I'm just like, careful what you say to McCorkle. I completely agree with you, because this isn't a team where, like, and also, I want to say this because this has been coming up of people saying, oh, why didn't the Patriots draft Lamar Jackson in 2018? And my rebuttal to that is, why would they? Because, yeah, you know, where everyone's like, oh, they could have had him. I'm like, yeah, what are they going to do? Just have him sit there and wait to be the heir apparent to Tom? No, they were not going to do that. So you kind of fuck yourself by doing that. But at the same time, too, you just can't do that. And even going back to the waiting for next year or hoping someone falls to 34, if they were a fringe contender or if they were a team in the playoffs right now, say where Miami is or where even a Pittsburgh is, yeah, I understand doing that, but you're not. You won 4 football games the entire year, including a great win on Christmas Eve, which I know people wanted to lose. I thoroughly enjoyed the Christmas Eve win in Denver.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in Denver? Of course. Yeah.
And just the Bryce Behringer firing up Chad. But that's the thing. So my thing is, unless Williams or May fall to 3, you take the kid from the Bayou. I know at the beginning of the year you were kind of skeptical on him being a top 10 quarterback, but now
things have changed.
Things have changed. Like, he's the guy that you can rely on to make plays. And even to going back to the other situations, like with Justin Fields, I think more than anything, the Luke Getsy firing was the writing on the wall for Fields is out. Because if you bring in a new guy, they're going to want to work with Caleb. Apparently, Bears brass really want Caleb. So they're going to draft Caleb unless they pull Vontae Mack on us, which I know it's not the best movie, but it's one of those bad good movies. I always
watch. I love that movie. I watch it every year. It's a good movie. I'm sorry. It's dumb, but I like it.
Exactly. So with that, then, you can go, and then there's so much wide receiver talent, even tight end talent too, which there is a tight end prospect from Monday's game that I really wish was available this year, but is not. That's Colston Loveland from Michigan. Mm-hmm. Looked really good. And speaking of Michigan, I have remember how a few months ago I said to you Michael Penix Jr. to the Broncos, which still could happen. Mm-hmm. I think there's a world where JJ McCarthy is a Bronco because Sean Payton's going to use him exactly like he did with Taysom Hill. Minus the creatine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I can
without the muscle.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a fun pick if it happens. I wonder where McCarthy goes. I think he's the player that I'm the most confused about where where he goes eventually. Yeah. He's 20 years old, super young. He has all the raw talent in the world, but he's the kind of player you can see busting. He's the kind of pick that can go bust very, very easily. Just because, like, you look at it and you're like,
yep.
Yes, he's a great athlete. He's probably someone who's a great college quarterback. Will that translate to the pros? I think that's a fair question, but that would be a lot of fun.
I think so, too. It's just that, like, whole questioning. My thing with him has always been, I know he can make plays, but he's never really had the game where, you know, the whole entire game's put on his back. You know, like what we saw from Penix, where I know everyone likes to say, oh, Penix is Penix that. I'm like, look, put the holding calls aside. His offensive line was not giving him time to throw. And even, too, Washington's got a ton of weapons that are probably going to be there. I don't think Odunze will be there, but, like, a Jalen McMillan at 34 could probably be there. Yep. Even the tight end from Washington as well. I think Jack Westmore. I'm not sure if he's draft eligible, but, like, He could be there. And even too, if I gotta take a look at the wide receiver draft, like I gotta start doing my draft research, but like,
yeah,
that's your point. At 34, you can go and get someone. Yep. At even in the third round, you can find someone. Like we were saying too, like all these guys, like Deebo Samuel was a second round pick, DK yep. Metcalf, AJ Brown. I know that's bringing back painful memories for Pats fans, but you can't control the path. But when people do all that stuff, I always want to say this: you can't control the past. You can only look ahead to the future.
Yep.
That's the big thing.
There are people who are still crying about N'Keal Harry. So, you know.
Like, guys, 5 years ago. And even still, now the whole Belichick thing, like you can't say anymore, oh, Belichick this, Belichick that, because for all we know, if he goes to Atlanta, he thinks Brock Bowers 8, and they just misuse the entire Atlanta weaponry scheme, even though I doubt that happens.
Yeah.
More than where would Belichick go, besides the Gerard Mayo report that came out, who's McGarvin's number one pick to coach this team next year? If Robert Kraft came to you and drove to your house and came in through that door that I see right over your shoulder and said, I want you to pick our next head coach, who is your guy?
Tough. Yeah, that's a really tough question, because
you can give like two or three.
Yeah, all right, so the first name that comes to mind, and it might not be very popular, I like Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles. I know Eagle fans right now are not very happy with him. I really like how he utilizes Devontae Smith and AJ Brown, right? It's not this just gung-ho all verticals all the time scheme like they ran last year. So I really like that you can get – he does a really good job getting A.J. Brown involved deep and intermediate. He does a really good job of getting Smith involved at all three levels. And I really like the way he employs even though he didn't play a ton this year, Dallas Goedert. And then their running scheme, I think, is supremely creative, right? They have this, like – it's not quite wide zone, but it's this one cut like offensive style where it's just like find the hole and go. And I think that really – that's something that could really work for – someone like Ramondre Stevenson, even though I think he has, you know, he has all the shimmy to kind of make a move in the hole or whatever the case is there. But I think just finding him a lane and letting him go, get upfield and get vertical, I really like that. So I think Brian Johnson from the Eagles is currently a name I really like, right? I don't know necessarily that I want him to coach the team, but that's, you know, he's a name I really like. I know people really like Ben Johnson, and I don't know, the last month and a half, how has that not soured more people? I think what Detroit's been doing, I think they've been winning games, so like, you know, that cures all. But schematically, you're seeing what they're doing, and you're like, this isn't the same guy from October, right? Like, he's not lighting the world on fire anymore. So that's interesting. Bobby Slowick, I think he's getting a ton of credit down in Houston. I think he should, right? I think he's a real good coach. I think a lot of that, though, is relying on CJ Stroud just being an absolute stud, because the minute he was out, when he missed those two games with the concussion, schematically that offense didn't look right. It did not look right. So I think he's getting a lot of credit for just excellent play from his quarterback. He's getting a lot of credit from like, oh yeah, look what he did with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. And again, the minute Stroud was out of the equation, you know, I mean, by that point Tank was already out, but you know, Nico Collins looked like Nico Collins from last year all of a sudden again, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know, I think people tend to get like stuck, they get like stun locked into like, these are the only coordinators that are worth anything, the guys that I've heard about. So it's the same three guys, and they're the only guys that matter. And if you don't get one of those guys, you've missed out on your guy for the year. And I don't necessarily know that I believe that, but that's, you know, those are two guys that I kind of like, Brian Johnson and Bobby Slowick. I also like the Gerard Mayo thing is interesting, because earlier in a group chat, someone accused me of being anti-Mayo, or, you know, I'm upset because, you know, Bill got fired, and so that's why, you know, you don't like Mayo. And I'm not. I think my take on Mayo is I think he'll be a fine head coach. I think he'll probably even be pretty good. I just don't love the idea of the Patriots immediately going to, hey, we have this guy, you know, we have head coach at home, and we're just going to go with the head coach at home, as opposed to like doing a nice thorough, you know, a nice thorough look, you know, across the league and seeing what's out there. Just because I don't love the idea of, hey, we already have this guy here, let's keep him, but we moved on from the other guy because we wanted a fresh start. It's not a fresh start if we're keeping the same guys who are already here. And I don't know that, you know, obviously, I don't know if Mayo's going to go ahead and bring in all sorts of new guys, but generally speaking, people tend to work with the people they work with, right? So there's a very real chance that he just kind of keeps the guys he's familiar with because people like what's familiar. So I think that is something to monitor, but I would not be against Jerron Mayo being the head coach. And in fact, I quite like him. It's just, you know, I want the Patriots to kind of take a take a bird's eye view of everything before making their decision and not just going, hey, we have a guy, we're just going to roll with this guy, and that is it. Last name that I liked, and this is another offensive guy, but Frank Smith, the offensive coordinator for the Dolphins, I think he is incredibly innovative with some of the stuff that he's like brought out, but I think he falls into the similar category to Eric Bieniemy, bless you, by the way, where I think it's fair that people are going to question whether or not he's the guy over there, because, you know, he's obviously with Mike McDaniel. So people are going to look at like, well, is he actually putting together the offense? Did he actually scheme up this like really clever, the little motion they have, or the little like the plays where they kind of hide Tyreek Hill all over the formation and things of that sort? Did he really create that, or is he just kind of running what McDaniel has? I think it's probably more than that. And so I'd be interested in that as well. It's just coaches like that always kind of give me pause, because you're coming over, you're not bringing the weapon with you, right? So like, it's really, I don't want to trivialize it, because I'm sure, you know, coaching in the NFL is hard. Coaching period is hard, but it's really easy to look great when you have the fastest player in the NFL and he can just fix shit. You know what I mean? So if you're not bringing that guy with you, you know, I don't think you're going to have Tyquan Thornton running that that little, you know, the motion out, wheel up. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's another name that I'd be interested in seeing as well.
So Bobby Slowick is my non-New England candidate. That's my big one, just because of what he's done with Stroud. Obviously, look, they had a couple bad weeks, obviously, like you're saying, without, but he has a real chance this week to prove himself. For as much as the Ben Johnson in Detroit has been impressive, I completely agree with you there, where I'm just like, I think he needs to go to that team that's like, you know, truly bottom of the barrel. Now I know New England's, they're 4-13, but like, you know what I mean? Like a team that like forever that has
nothing
that
going on.
Yeah. Nothing going on in Carolina, but, who decided they want to interview everyone for some reason, like, they're interviewing, I think, 12 people, which just sounds insane to me. Or even two, if he want, like, LA's another outside candidate, I think, for a guy like him. You know, like, get the innovative offensive mind with, like, Justin Herbert, who's ready to go. But at the same, because that's going back to Bill quickly with LA, for as cool as it would be, they are not in a good situation salary cap wise.
Correct.
That's the thing. Yep. And Atlanta's in a decent salary cap situation. So that's why I feel like Atlanta's the more likely candidate, unless a wild card team that, you know, had no business losing does lose on Sunday, which one of them would Dallas? Absolutely. No. It's like Tracy Morgan in the car in that movie. Nope. Hell no. It's just like burning gut feeling. Because with Tampa, it was just like, really? Tampa? But with Dallas, it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just bad. Which I have a bit of a hot take with you with Dallas. Because there is one player on. So for the last few years, like 21, I was like, Amari Cooper's gone after this year for salary cap reasons. And I said the same thing with Zeke this year, which I like Zeke in New England. No problems with him. Especially, too, we saw what he could do when Ramondre went down.
Yep.
But Dallas is in a fun pickle of a situation this offseason. So Dak Prescott's probably going to want to rework his contract to get more money.
Sure.
They have a defensive player who's probably going to go, hey, do you see what Max Crosby, TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, and Nick Bosa are paying? Give me on that level of $30 million for a defensive edge. That could potentially leave a wide receiver one on the outside looking in. It's very crazy. It's very, very out there.
Who?
Number 88.
Ooh, no way.
It's a very out there hypothetical. Because I'm looking at it, unless Dallas somehow finds the money, I just don't see a world where they give Dak a restructured deal, Parsons $30 to $35 million, because, you know, Lamb's going to want the same amount of money. So I'm just saying, if the taking's there, if you're Bob Kraft, do you sniff around at that? Or do you just – that's like, you know, the hypothetical dream scenario, like when you're in high school and you see the girl where you're just like, I'm going to ask her out. And it usually ends up with you just being laughed at. So that's the situation, but that's just a player I wonder with free agency where I'm just like, if you're CeeDee Lamb, will Dallas be willing to pay you or not?
I think they have no choice. I think he's made himself, just
one people fantasy football. Year.
Yeah, he's the kind of player that you kind of move you know, when he comes to you, he's like, hey, I want X amount of money. You're like, all right, I'll move some things around. I'll figure it out. even if it means taking a hit on the offensive line, which seems to be the most likely to me anyway. No way. You cannot let him walk. I think that's a huge error. Although I like Brandon Cooks, I don't think they have much else behind those two. Jalen Tolbert is fine as like a rotational piece. Like, you know, I'm not big on them. And I really like their tight end, Jake Ferguson. They have been really good at finding they've been really good at finding. My friend turned it really well for me the other day. He said they're really good at finding great whites at tight end. And I'm like, that is excellent. Because they just be pumping these dudes out. And I'm like, holy shit.
Jason Witten, Dalton Schultz, Jake Ferguson.
Blake Jarwin, he was really good for them for a couple of years before he destroyed his legs. No way. But if it's available, you absolutely make the move. Yeah. You probably move on from Brandon Cooks, which is so interesting because it's going to be another team that moves on from him, even though he's hyper productive. It's just like, at the end of the day, it's just Brandon Cooks, and you can't pay him $22 million. Like, he is a really good player, but there are better players, and you can't pay him the money he's worth, and so he's going to keep bouncing around. I think Dallas for Bill would be really fun, though. I think you give him Micah Parsons, and it can get really ugly.
Yeah, I completely agree. A player I would look at, though, for a line perspective, though, would be like a Tyler Biadasz, for example, if he were available. Like, that's a more realistic, or even I want to say Tyron Smith. It's just the injury concerns kind of scare me.
And yeah, now, I wonder how much longer he plays. It feels like we're almost at the end there.
Yeah, same with Zach Martin too. Which Zach Martin is going to be a Hall of Famer one day. I'm not discrediting Zach Martin. Zach Martin's going to be in Canton. And also too, for folks out there saying CeeDee Lamb, you're crazy. It's a very out there hypothetical. I'm just saying,
and those are fun.
Yeah,
no matter what, we're at that time of the year. It makes for good conversation because we could sit here and just say Brandon Ayuk 8 million times into the microphone, and how much fun is that? No, I like that. That's a really good hypothetical. Yeah,
one that I want to avoid from a wide receiver standpoint. People might be outlandish with this, but it is Mike Evans, which I will say this, one of the most underrated wide receiver careers in NFL history, in my opinion. Considering who he's done it with. Now he's had 3 years of Tom, but if you look outside those years of Tom, he had what, Fitzpatrick, Jameis, and Baker. Like, it's not
wasn't he there with Mr. Longneck with the neck? Did he not play with the neck? No, not Gabbert. Oh my gosh. He went to he ended up in Chicago after.
Oh my gosh. Glennon?
Yes, yeah, Mike Glennon. Yeah. Did he play with Mike Glennon? Oh no, because Glennon played at 13, and then he definitely played with Glennon because Glennon played at 13.
Because I think Glennon, it was like Glennon and Winston was like the system going on. Yeah,
So Glennon was drafted in 13, and I remember Winston was drafted in 15, and Evans was drafted in 14. So it definitely played with the neck for a little bit there.
So that's just the thing with Mike Evans, because with him, for as great as it would be to have, I just think for him eventually it's got to plateau off. He just turned 30, which, look, I just turned 30, and I don't feel old yet, but 30 in the NFL, like, eventually, I think he does end up staying in Tampa, especially considering what they've done this year, but that's just a name I would avoid just because you don't know eventually when it's going to fall off.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do with wide receiver this year, honestly. Like, there's a lot of guys out there. I think Ayuk and Higgins are my tops.
Yep.
Pittman's another out there hypothetical because I do think the Colts keep him.
Yeah.
Because he's just one of those guys. He's been getting better year after year after year.
For sure.
But it's an ultimate big wait and see and just go from there because who knows what they end up doing. And then even too, I'm going to say this is a tight end as well. I think in a perfect world, you keep Henry, you let Gesicki walk, and you sign Farrell for cheap. And then if you really want to create it, I think with tight end, honestly, draft someone. Just, you know what? Someone will be there on Friday or Saturday. Guarantee you will find someone Friday or Saturday.
Here's a fun name. Eric All, tight end for, I think, Iowa at this point. But he really started at Michigan. He's a good player. I think he is vastly underrated in what he can do. I don't know if he's declared yet, but it's time.
You said the perfect words. You said Iowa and tight end in the same sentence. That'll
do it. Yeah, that will do it. He's a good player.
And they're tough, too, because, like, for example, it always shocked me that play that TJ Hockenson, when he tore his AC and MCL, and that he just walked off the field. It was just like, I'm good. I'm fine. But no, this whole offseason is going to be a fun journey and an adventure for us, because I've been saying this every year where it's like Pandora's box. But this year truly is Pandora's box, just for the sense of we don't know what to expect. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be very interesting. And also, I'll say this too. I'm with the Tom Curran stuff earlier. It's not that I'm not a fan of his. I was just eventually like, okay, Tom, like, just pump the brakes on it, because it seemed like you were pushing him out. You're not Felger, but another story for another day.
Yep.
But you know what? This whole draft process is going to be fun. This is the time to lock into the prospects. This is the time to, you know what? Hey, watch the Senior Bowl. Look at the I don't know how much you look at the Shrine Bowl anymore, because without Bill, I feel like those guys, those diamonds in the rough, maybe missed, which that's going to be the tougher pill to swallow, in all honesty.
Yeah, it's just nailing the day three picks. Just, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That is exactly it. But you know what? I got to do this with you, because we do have some football to play this weekend.
Which I completely forgot about. It was so, like, about 20 minutes before we got on, I was, like, scrolling through Twitter, and I'd seen, like, oh, you know, so-and-so practiced. He'll be ready to go this weekend. And I'm like, holy shit, there are games. I completely forgot. The Patriots completely dominated it. I think it was Deebo Samuel who had mentioned someone, we had a good day of practice or whatever, we'll be ready to go. And I was like, holy cow, there's football to be played. I completely forgot.
Before we do the football, a friend of the program, Alex Barth, I'm not going to pull the tweet up on the screen, but he actually mentioned a pretty cool stat that Nick Saban started at Alabama in 2007. He and Belichick coached 17 simultaneous seasons. By my count, that's just over 200 weeks of football. Do you know they only lost on the same weekend 6 times in 17 years?
I saw that. That was insane. I'm like, there's no way that's real. But, like, yeah, it's – yeah, yeah. They also, I don't think, ever won a championship in the same year.
No, that was weird. It was always out. Like, I remember 2018, they won the national championship. We lost to the Eagles. And then 2019, they lost to Clemson. Well, they got their asses whooped by Clemson. And then the Patriots beat the Rams in Atlanta. And then 2016, same thing. And then 2017, the exact same thing. So it's
weird.
That one's wild. And I'll say this with the Saban thing, too. I do think that he's probably going to go to TV in some capacity.
Yep.
I feel like he'll do, like, not College Game Day, but, like, he'll do some panel work for ESPN or something like that. Like, I don't think that's he comes out of retirement or he tries to go to the pros. No, he's just going to ride off into the sunset and just live his remaining years with his wife somewhere. I think they have a house in Georgia or Florida, I heard.
And I know that he mentioned his health was declining. So, you know, I'm obviously wishing all the best for my coach, you know, as an Alabama football fan. That was a tough Wednesday, and then to wake up today and it's like, hey, Bill's also out. I'm like, holy shit, all of my coaches are gone.
The one thing I'll say too is replacing Saban at that job is going to be the taller task than replacing Belichick with the Patriots, because here's the thing: the SEC is no longer Bama's king. You got Georgia in there, you got LSU in there. Texas is going to be. I saw some people say, "Oh, Sark could go back to Alabama," and I'm like, "No, Sark's got a really good team in Texas that's going to the SEC that probably will be in the playoffs next year with the 12-team playoff." Which I still say this: that 12 is too much. They should have done 8 because
I agree. I think 12 is way too many. I think you overcorrected.
Because here's the thing: 5 versus 12 is not going to be. It's not going to be March Madness upsets where you get that. You might get one every couple of years, but for the most part, like, you're going to get a few games that are just purely someone's getting cooked. There's no way, politely putting it. But moving on to this weekend, we got Houston taking on Cleveland. This is like the one game where I feel like whoever loses, it's not going to be disappointing, just because it's the holy crap, we got to the playoffs, we looked really good, and it is what it is. Like, I know it's like losing still sucks, but do you get where I'm coming from with that metaphor?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be one of those, like, you know, we're not just happy to be here, but at the same time, like, as a fan of those teams, losing, there's no shame in losing that. You're like, you lose either team. You're like, you lost. You're like, well, we had a pretty good year. We ended up there, and the future is bright.
Exactly. As I stare at And I'm going to say this right now, too. I know we rag on announcers a lot, but I'm looking at Kevin Harlan right now. And the fact that he called the Jalen Reagor kickoff return TD, that was just chef's kiss.
He is my favorite. He is my favorite. He's just, he has such a good voice. He has such a good energy. And he's so good on the fly.
And I think I just saw Max Crosby dap up Kevin Durant courtside in LA. So Max is already on to bigger things. But with this football game, though, I know Cleveland's been the hot story. I just don't see Houston getting cooked again like they did a few weeks ago. And also, I'm going to say this, I don't see Amari Cooper going as psycho as he did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that was insane. That was insane. Well, here's the thing that gives me pause, right? I think that Cleveland can replicate close to what they did. I don't think, obviously, Amari Cooper's not going to go for 8 million yards like he did last time they played. Yeah. But there's nothing on Texas's defense that, you know, Houston's defense that makes me think, oh, yeah, this can't happen again. I'm like, I don't know, probably could happen again, right? Like, Joe Flacco's still playing well. Their O-line is still protecting well, and they'll have shots downfield. I think the bigger matchup, though, is going to be that Houston, you know, Houston offense versus that Cleveland defense. That defense is insane, and I just don't see it for, you know, for Houston. I think the biggest concern is going to be Charlie Heck on that offensive line for Houston, because he got absolutely destroyed when they played when they played last time. He's their offensive tackle, and I'm like, he's gonna see a big dose of Myles Garrett again, and I there's nothing that had happened in the last few weeks that makes me think he's not gonna get cooked again. So I think that's gonna be a tough look there.
I do too. It's just, and also say this too. The signings, the trade for Za'Darius Smith and getting Shelby Harris, I think were some of the most unnoticed signings, because that opened up Myles Garrett to be able to go out there and
go anywhere. Freak. Absolutely. And then I think, I don't know if underrated is the right term, because I think ball knowers absolutely rate them properly, but that secondary tandem of, they have, you know, Mark Emerson, they have Denzel Ward, obviously, and then Greg Newsom. I think Greg Newsom has been playing outstanding ball. I know his rookie year, people were a little hit or miss on him, especially because he didn't record any interceptions, but I think he's a really good player. I think they have like a really good trio there. And then they have Grant Delpit on the back end. I don't actually know if he'll be playing. I think he might play. I think that their secondary is so, so good. And then you have, you know, JOK, you know, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, at Steel linebacker.
Draft.
He's so good. He's just so good. So I don't know. I feel really good about Cleveland in that, in that matchup.
Like I said, I haven't made any like official pick when I said Houston. I feel confident in this game to be closer than what we saw a few weeks ago. That's the thing I'll say too. And with Houston's defense, the only player on that defense that really gives me pause to where it's like, yeah, this guy's a star, and that's Derek Stingley Jr. Someone who's I don't even want to say he's been really good. He's just really coming to his own and like living up to that third overall pick status. Ultimately, though,
he took a little longer to get there than Sauce, but he is absolutely worth the pick. He's a great player.
Exactly. They breed them differently in the SEC. But ultimately, though, I think this I still have more. It means more, but for this point of narratives, I want to go for Cleveland because we all know what we want to see next weekend. We all know
Flacco going back to Baltimore. Holy cow, that would be good. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really rooting for Baltimore. It's not even low key either. I'm big on Lamar Jackson, so I'm really rooting for Baltimore. I want them to take the whole thing, but I think Flacco in Baltimore in the playoffs, that would be sick.
Yes. That's the thing, because eventually. Because for him, too, it's just that doubting of, like, everyone that still is doubting him, like, which Arthur Blank. I don't know why Arthur Blank doubted him, but that's another story for another day. Saturday night, Miami, Kansas City. I'm sorry. For the cold narratives aside, and for as bad as they've looked, when one quarterback that wears 15 knows how to get it done in January, you don't pick against that.
Agree. I think they have looked bad. I really think the cold – this is going to be one of the few times where the cold actually matters, just because we're going from Miami, right, where this week it was probably low 80s, nice and humid and all that, and it's going to be negative 30 with a wind chill. It's going to be, you know, it's going to feel like negative 30 in Kansas City for the game. That's going to be a tough transition, and I think in those elements, right, when it's real cold, you want to run the ball, and I think, you know, Miami can do that. But that, I think, is where Kansas City really shined. And I know a lot gets placed on their pass defense. Everyone's always talking, you know, Legarius Sneed and Traverius, not Traverius Ward. I'm blanking on the corner opposite him. The young guy. He's the second year player. McDuffie, and then Watson is the guy I was thinking of. I think they are obviously, you know, they're good in the secondary. I think really their front six plays really, really well against the run. And I think if Miami can't get it going on the ground, you're asking a lot in, you know, of Tua to kind of just like, hey, you know, go out there and put the game on your back. Obviously Tyreek Hill is going to be a factor there. I don't know. I'm just not betting against Kansas City at home in the cold.
There is another second year player on the Kansas City defense that I feel like is flies very much under the radar, but has been a significant, not significant impact player, but has been an impact player for them this year.
Who we think
that's George Karlaftis.
Yeah. He's really come on. I know everyone expected him to be really good as a pass rusher coming out. I think he's been outstanding against the run. That's been like what's been surprising to me. I thought he's been really good. So give me Kansas City in that game. I just don't buy Miami in the cold. Also, that whole, I know it's real fun and it's super funny. The whole they haven't beaten anyone. They beat one team over 500 in the last calendar year.
Five field goals.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I also think that Miami has so many injuries on the defense, and we're all just saying like, oh, it doesn't matter. But when you're signing JPP off the street to come like save your pass rush, and you have him and Melvin Ingram, neither of which were here a couple of weeks ago, and you have both of them as your bookends, and they're going to be the guys to save us, you got some issues. And then you have, obviously, Jerome Baker is out, right? I think he's going to be out the rest of the year, regardless of if they win or not. I don't love it. I think, obviously, their secondary is still pretty good. Jalen Ramsey's a good player. He didn't decline like everyone thought he would. X has played better this year. Xavier Howard. He's played better this year than he did last year. I like both of their safeties, Javon Holland and Brandon Allen. I think, you know, they have on paper. It's just that front seven is just so alarming. I think Isaiah Pacheco could have a day.
Yeah, that's the big thing too. And also, look for – I know he's been – he hasn't been himself this year, but look for 87 as well. 87 is the kind – this is the kind of game where I feel like he can bully some people out there on the football field.
Tough year for him.
Yeah. I mean, off the field, no, but on the field, yes.
Yeah.
One thing I want to say, I don't know how much of a crazy take this is. I'm not saying it would happen this year, but going into next year, would Mike McDaniel be considered a hot seat candidate if they were to lose this game badly?
Yeah, that would be surprising. I think they're an ascending team. I think it would be premature, but you know, Stephen Ross wouldn't surprise me. There's nothing an NFL owner at this point can do that would surprise me. I wonder if he thinks oh, they're much closer. They should be much closer than they are. I saw rumblings earlier today that Nick Sirianni could potentially be on the hot seat, and I think that's insane. The guy took you to a Super Bowl last year. I think he's a little overrated as a coach. I think it's insane to fire him. A 2 years into it, a year after taking you to the Super Bowl, I think that's a little silly.
We'll talk about the game, but I think the only way they would get fired is if they got absolutely cooked in that game Monday night. That's, I think, the only way. If they were to lose it close, like, look, I think he stays, but they would have to lose by like 30 points and just look like they would have to look like what New England looked like against Buffalo 2 years ago in the wild card round for that to happen.
Yeah.
And when I say the Mike McDaniel fire thing, I mean, is next year the year where it's like, you got to shit or get off the pot, you know, for Mike McDaniel? That's what I mean by it. I don't mean like, oh, he's going to get fired if he loses this game, but next year, is it that conversation of when are you going to take the next step? You know, that's where I look at for Mike McDaniel.
So you're wondering if he'll be in the McDermott zone.
In the McDermott/Stefanski zone. And I know Stefanski's probably going to coach of the year, but this year he was the hottest seat candidate because we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know what Mr. Sexual Massage Assault was going to do, even though now they basically took Joe Flacco around, which next year that's an offseason question for the Cleveland Browns. But
Yeah.
And then Sunday, we open up with Buffalo and Pittsburgh. I'm going to say this right now. I have a really weird feeling this could be for Buffalo, because I was saying this feels like the now or never year for them.
Yeah.
Because they've faced all the adversity. I think I don't think McDermott's on the hot seat anymore, considering, look, they basically were left for dead and they won the freaking division.
Yeah.
And, but I'll say this,
I think,
though.
I think he might be.
Oh, you think he might still be on the hot seat?
Yeah, I think because, like you mentioned, this is their, like, you know, their years, their shit or get off the pot year. Yeah. And there's only so if he goes out on Sunday, if he goes out sad, if they go out there and lose to a Pittsburgh team that has absolutely zero business in the playoffs, I think it's time.
Yeah, that's the one place where I agree, because if you look at the last two wildcard round games for them, they almost lost to the Phillip Rivers led Colts.
Yep.
And then Skylar Thompson almost went into their building and beat them last year. So yep. I can see that happening. I'll say this about this game. I am still going to pick Buffalo to win, but that I don't know. I know you're not too much of a sports gambler, but that 10-point number scares me.
No, that's way too high.
Even with T.J. Watt out of the lineup, which that's going to be a big blow for Pittsburgh. Which I'll say this right. That's the thing too, because like I think eventually, and someone said this today as a joke, where Rudolph's eventually going to crash the sleigh.
Yep. So yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So that very well could happen on Sunday. So. I still think Buffalo wins, but remember a few weeks ago, the Chargers were like 13-point favorites, and they barely beat them. New England,
yep.
Hell, if it weren't for Bailey Zappe being stupid, I think the Patriots win that football game, which probably would have pissed off a lot more people. Yep. But so that's my whole take about this game, because I think I want to see this next weekend too, because for all the times the Bills and the Chiefs have played, Patrick Mahomes has never played in Buffalo in front of a crowd.
Has he not? Was the only one time year he played in Buffalo was the 2020?
Yep.
Holy smokes. I never realized that.
Every other game they played has been at Arrowhead since that game in 2020. So that's where I kind of want to see that, where it's like Allen going into that, no, Allen and Mahomes in that environment in Western New York, which if it were to happen, I'm only a 90-minute drive away and I would seriously consider going to that game just because as a partisan football fan, unless it was supposed to be like stupid cold, then I would pass. because I'm sorry, I'm not going to pay the money to go watch a Buffalo Bills game outdoors when it's freezing. If it's like, you know, 30s, I'll do it. But if it's like going to be like, you know, 25, wind chill, all this stuff, then no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Green Bay and Dallas. This is I don't see the Cowboys losing this game. I know Jordan Love's looked good. I know the Packers have come on as of late. I think this is just a chance for Dallas to really show, because it's either, this is the thing with Dallas. It's either they have something to do, they have the chance to do something very hilarious, or they have the chance to just kind of show and shut up everyone and then next week do the hilarious thing when they don't get to the conference championship game.
Yeah, that's an interesting game. I think the line is weird. It's Dallas seven. Minus seven. I think it should be higher. I think this could be a grisly blowout. I know that Green Bay has come on of late, but I was going to say a really, really, really poorly worded sentence. I was going to say, oh, look who they came on. And I'm like, well, that's poorly worded. But all the same, I know they've come on as late. I don't think they are in the same class as the Cowboys. And I think if Dallas plays the game that Dallas can play, they blow them out. I mean, I'm talking grizzly blowout, like 45-10 kind of blowout. I think that Dallas defense is legit. I think it is absolutely legit, and that offense is what the offense is. It's just, my only thing is Dallas just, it's just so good about letting you down when you start to believe. You're like, oh, this team can go somewhere, and then they lose, and you're like, what the hell? And it's always a what the hell kind of loss. It's never like, oh, we played them tight, that was close. It's always like, hey, dude, show up.
Yeah, that was like 2 years ago against San Francisco. It was the weird clock management. Dak had like no time to spike the ball or get in the position.
Yep.
Last year it was Dalton Schultz not getting both feet in bounds and then deciding, hey, we're going to put Ezekiel Elliott at center.
At center, yep.
So let them do that next weekend. But for now, I think this is the game that Dallas takes care of business in.
For sure.
But the game of the weekend, I'm sorry, it's Sunday night. And there is... the villain part in me is coming up for this game, because I think Matthew Stafford is going to go into Ford Field. I don't know how much of a Simpsons fan you are, but there is a scene early, early, early on in an episode where Bart falls in love with his neighbor. She has a boyfriend and she goes into his chest and takes his heart and just rips it out and says, you won't be needing this. And there is a part of me that wants to see Stafford just do that to Lions fans. Cause think about it.
Yeah.
30 years, first playoff home game at Ford Field. and your former guy comes into your building
and rips and your heart out,
rips your heart out, pees on your Cheerios, just makes it a miserable off season for the Detroit Lions. I just, because also I'll say this too, for as much as we talk about that offense, that defense has looked very wonky throughout the entire season.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I want LA to win. If only because I think Matthew, even though he won a Super Bowl, people still disrespect Matthew Stafford. And I just don't understand why. He's a good player. McVay built a really good team over there. Especially given his constraints,
yep.
Right? Didn't have the draft picks, didn't really have the cap space. They're starting like a bunch of nobodies, quote unquote nobodies, and they're making it happen. So I want that to happen. I just don't know that it will. Mm-hmm. But that'd be fun. On the other hand, though, I do want Detroit to win, just so that we can just shut up with the whole they haven't won, you know, a playoff game since 1991. Like, yeah, they have not won a playoff game in my lifetime, but. All of that could change, and that would be a really good story. I just know people are going to overreact in, you know, in if Detroit wins, they're going to overreact, and Dan Campbell's going to get a lot of flowers. But I agree with you on that defense just not being up to snuff. I think they have a good safety tandem. I don't buy Cam Sutton as a top corner. And he's when he signed in the offseason, everyone's like, oh, he's going to be so good, and I'm like, Have y'all watched him? Like, not really. So I it bore out this year. You saw, he's like, he's been fine, but yeah. Yeah.
It's like, because I'll say this too, and for as much as CJ Stroud has looked good, but the fact that Puka broke the record, if I had a vote from the AP, which they were due yesterday, apparently, he'd be my vote for Offensive Rookie of the Year just based off of everything that he did with breaking a 63-year-old record. But when it comes to this game, like, and also ask you this too, because I very much feel like this could be it for Matthew Stafford. I don't know what it is. It's just, this feels like it's it. And then he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be in that Edelman Hall of Fame conversation, which, unlike Edelman, I do think because he has the championship, he does get into Canton.
I agree. And he's a quarterback.
Yeah. That's the thing too. He's a quarterback. He'll get in. He should have been MVP in that game. I feel him.
I agree. But you know how it is. It's, you know. He's being carried, and Cooper Kupp had such a great year, la 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 la. And it's like, all right, you can't denigrate him for giving his players the position, you know, the ability to make plays. Like I don't know. It would have been Odell otherwise, though. But then he, you know, obviously ripped his ACL. So
One thing I want to say about this game, though, is, you know how you were saying the overreaction stuff? I think there's gonna be an overreaction for this game when it comes to the head coaching hirings. Because do you remember last year when Cincinnati walked into Buffalo and then beat the Bills handedly, and everyone was giving Lou Anarumo his flowers, and then they lose to Kansas City, and that went away immediately?
Yep.
If Detroit wins this game, you're going to hear the exact same thing, where it's like, Aaron Glenn's going to be the next head coach of this team, which I still think Aaron Glenn's going to be a head coach. Right, like Ben Johnson, same thing. You know, where it's like, they're going to be giving their flowers, they're going to be showering them with praise.
Yep.
And then, because for as much as Dallas and Philly in the divisional round would be a good matchup, and we'll get to that in a second, Dallas-Detroit rematch, I think, for a storyline purposes and considering what happened, would be better. It's just, I think, besides the defense, the only thing holding back Detroit is Dan Campbell's emotions. I referenced the game I went to a lot because in that game, they went 0-for-6 on fourth down and didn't score any points.
Holy cow, yeah.
That whole decision to go for it there where they could have won the game, you could have easily had just taken the points and gone to overtime. But I feel like Dan Campbell, for as much as emotion can fire them up, it can also be a hindrance for them. So we'll see if he can keep it in line. But ultimately, it's going to be a good game. But I'm going to go with the Rams just because at the end of the day, I trust McVay more than I trust Campbell.
Agree.
Dan Campbell's a chance to prove me wrong, though.
For sure. I think we don't even have to look as far back as, you know, the Patriots game from last year. I think really the Cowboys game from this year really did it as well, where he was absolutely determined to go for two. Even after they had the penalty that drove them outside of the 10, and he still lined up to go for it. I'm like, that's insane. Kick the extra point, and like, that just didn't make any sense to me. And I'm like, oh well, this is what he does. Like, he kind of gets it in his head. Hey, here's what we're going to do. And he just won't come off of it. And I think that's perfectly said. I think that's something that's holding that team back. So I think we'll probably have a similar inflection point this year, this weekend. We'll see, we'll see what he's made of. And if it works, everyone's going to be like, yeah, that's the kind of player you want. That's the kind of coach you want. He's super aggressive, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, I think sometimes he's aggressive for the sake of being aggressive. And I think that's just a bad way to coach, right? I don't love going for it in your own territory. Nope. You're at the 22, early in the game. Why are you going for it? Like, why? Like, kick the ball, play field position. Like, it's fine. I know that we're in a new era of sports where everything is, go for it. What do the analytics say and all that? And I respect that a lot. But I think a lot of times coaches get too in their own head about that. And it's like,
yep.
Yeah, bro, just kick the ball away, yeah. Play field position, your defense is playing well, just kind of, especially when it's early in the game and it's like, I understand, like, on one hand, you're like, oh, it's early enough in the game, it won't matter, but it's a huge difference if you're already down 7 to give it back to the opponent in their territory, they go up 14, now you're on the back foot, you know what I mean? It's like, you didn't need to do that, it's okay to play field position, punts aren't a bad play. But sometimes he coaches like he's allergic to punting, so.
That's exactly it. Sometimes instead of just being this like intense, aggressive guy where it's like, we got to do this. It's like, no, just take a step back and go do what's best for the team. Don't do what's best for you.
Yep.
And I'm going to keep Monday night short and sweet because, and I've been right about this a lot lately. I think this is the Philadelphia Eagles get right game.
Oh, I think
this is the game where they go into Tampa Bay, for as good as Tampa's looked, putting up only scoring 9 points against the Carolina Panthers.
Panthers, man. Yeah.
And letting Derek Carr clap your cheeks under your
knee. Yeah. I think short and sweet is the perfect way to put it. That's going to be a get-right game. Philly's going to do what Philly does. I don't think it'll be pretty, but I think it'll be effective. It'll be one of those games where, like, at the end of it, the score will say, like, 16-9 or something like that, but they'll have been outgained by, like, 120 yards, and, they were more efficient or whatever the case is there. That's what I think anyway.
Because what they did last Sunday was just – I'm sorry, that was pathetic. The fact that you let Tyrod Taylor just walk all over you.
Yep.
And
20 – you laid down. Yeah.
They laid down and died, even to the Arizona game, which, look, thank you, Arizona, because we have 3 because of that game. And I will say, I want to go off on a side tangent about that. I'm not sure how big of a hockey guy you are.
Not big.
That was my favorite moment of the year, though, was Kyler Murray walking into Philly wearing a Pittsburgh Penguins uniform.
Oh, the Penguins jersey, yeah.
Loved it. But going back to the game, I just think this is the whole thing with Baker Mayfield where this is it. And also, I'll be prepared to say this. If they lose and it's really, really bad, like if they get outgained and they lose by like 20 points, this could be a game where Todd Bowles gets fired.
I know it's kind of weird, but he's not a great coach, and he's never been a great coach. I just don't see it with him.
Nope. We know it from this time with the Jets. Obviously, the Patriots were dominant back then, but like we know with the Jets, he was just too conservative and was not a good coach.
And he's another one who got aggressive in like really weird situations, almost to like prove people like, oh, I see, I am aggressive, and I'm like, Not like this,
It's like the one annoying guy who's like just doing something to impress people, but in reality, you just end up looking stupid.
Yeah. I'm not big on Todd Bowles. I've never been big on Todd Bowles. If he goes packing, that's fine too.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to, and also I'll say that with Nick Sirianni too. I don't think it would be a matter of him getting fired. I think it'd be a matter of if they were to lose and not make it. I think if they were to lose wildcard weekend, it would be where the conversations went intense, but then it's that thing where it's like, hey, next year you got to be like back to what you were in 2022.
Yep.
Unless then you go. I can't see them firing him after 2 years. I know they got rid of Doug Peterson after 2 years after winning a Super Bowl, but I think those circumstances were much different than this.
I agree. And if I remember correctly, they hadn't even intended to fire Doug Peterson. Things had just gotten off the rails after the season, and they had the, towards the end of the season, and they had the meetings or whatever, and he had that interview where he was like, I'm pissed off, Angelo, and that whole thing, and then he was just out, and I'm like, I don't think this was intended. It was just kind of a natural consequence of them having a tough year.
Yep. That was just it. And the fact that the way they went out, just like pretty much going out, laying on their backs to, I believe it was Washington. And then they
ended the year with the Giants that year. I remember that. And I was like, yeah. Yes. Oh, wait, no, that was the Washington game. That's when they pulled, oh my goodness, that was such a weird game. They pulled Wentz. And it was like a clear move for tanking purposes. Like, oh, we've got to, for our draft position. And then they cut him, and it was like, wait, what? Yeah, that was a weird year.
Exactly. But this weekend should be good for football. It's good. It's always weird, the playoffs, because, like, believe me, we got to commemorate this because it's been 9 years yesterday since, and I call this the most stressful non-Super Bowl game that the Patriots ever played in. That was the divisional round game against the Baltimore Ravens. They go down 14-0. They tie the game. They go down by 14 again. They tie the game.
Yep.
And then JoJo LaFell catches a game-winning tackle.
Holy shit. What a throw. What a cat. Oh, my goodness. And then Daron Harmon picked it off to seal it. Ah, I love that game. One of my favorites.
I have to say my two favorite non-Super Bowls, probably that one, and then the Billy Cundiff 2011 AFC Championship game.
That game was stressful. I did not love that game. That was I took years off of my life. I was like, holy cow, this sucks. One of the best, one of my favorite games from the Patriots era, non-Super Bowl, not even a playoff game, and it was a loss, the game against the Packers in 2014. Holy cow, that was a great game. Great game. So I was like, that's fine.
That one, one of mine, 2012 Monday Night Football, Houston Texans.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
You walk in wearing the varsity jacket to get your ass whooped.
And just got absolutely thumped. Yeah.
42-14. I just remember seeing like Whitney Merciless, Connor Barwin, JJ Watt like coming in wearing these jackets, and I'm just like, what are you guys doing? And then another one that unexpectedly took years off my life was week 3, 2017 against the Houston Texans, where Deshaun Watson coming out party.
But yep, Brandon Cooks touchdown catch. Yeah, I remember that.
One of my most favorite Tom Brady touchdown throws was that one there.
The one to Brandon Cooks?
Yeah. Because just him getting there's the funniest thing, because he gets his feet down and then some random guy just goes and taps him on the shoulder. And I think like a cop goes up to him saying, buddy, don't do that. what was another one? LA 2018 divisional round as well.
LA 20. Oh, when they the Chargers game, the no one thinks we can win anything. That one
we should have known at that point they were winning the Super Bowl instead of going like we see. We should now that we look back on that, we should have been immediate like, yeah, they're winning Super Bowl. Like as soon as Tom Brady says, yeah, we suck, I'm just like, and the fact to his videos, the fact that he used many men the next day, where he's like,
that was fun.
Basically, him just going, you want me dead, I'm not leaving. Oh, and then the only other one I can think of is Jacksonville AFC Championship game. I know that was
a great game.
That has one of the biggest what ifs because if Jacksonville wins that game, because look, they go into disarray and they're a team now where I look at them next year where I'm just like, I don't know what to think of you. I do not know.
I agree. One of my another one of my favorites, and you know, we can wrap up obviously, but Colts Patriots 2013. That was the game where Alphonso Dennard picked off Andrew Luck early in the game. He took it from Levon Brazil. That was great. Dante Hightower had a pick, and that was the game where LeGarrette Blount was returning kicks and was just unstoppable. And I was like, "Holy shit, what is happening?"
That was a good one. And then another good one for mine was the 2013 Bronco game as well. The 24-0 win in overtime.
Yes. One of the best games in franchise history. I'm going to be honest. That was a game where, so Ridley had fumbled, LeGarrette Blount came in, he had fumbled, and it was just like, all right, we got Brandon Bolden. He's going to lead us to victory. great game.
And then another one that I just love is the more so than the game was just a photo that came from it, but the Tom Brady walking down the alley in Mexico with the cages surrounding him.
Yeah.
One of the coldest Tom Brady photos of all time.
When Brandon Cooks absolutely had Obi Melifonwu in hell, that was sick.
One point I want to make before we wrap up quickly, and I don't know how crazy of a take this is, but you know how everyone likes to label the generational talent?
Yeah.
I still think that the last truly generational talent we saw was Andrew Luck.
What, from a quarterback perspective?
No, from a quarterback perspective, because you know everyone comes in saying, this guy's going to be this guy's going to be that. I still feel like we haven't seen that, and it's still a damn shame that his career was cut as short as it would, because I feel like if he had continued on, I don't know if they win a Super Bowl. Yeah. But he's definitely a Hall of Famer.
I think Mahomes is a generational talent.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like from when college to all that. Cause,
like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. Someone who was like touted as like, the guy. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. I think, yeah. I know that a lot of people had Trevor Lawrence in that category. He was like the comp. Like everyone's like, oh, he's Andrew Luck. And he's just not having the pro career that a lot of people thought he would have. But, yeah. I think Andrew Luck was the last one who came in and it's like, hey, this guy's going to be the savior. And he came out and was like, hey, I'm the savior. So, yeah. Agree,
because kind of like how he took a bad team and then like they went to wild card, which all their playoff mishaps were weird because like the first year, look, they went in and they had to play the Ray Lewis Baltimore Ravens in his last season, which you weren't beating them, and then there was the Patriot game in 2014, and then put the bullshit aside, the Patriots whooped their ass,
absolutely killed them, yeah.
Nate sold their touchdown pass, I believe, in that game.
Yep, and James Evelyn had a nice touchdown as well.
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. But this podcast was a good one. It was emotional, but we also made it some fun. It was good. And, folks, he brought the idea up to me, and I'm going to say it live on air now. He's going to be here all playoffs long. He's not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
He's not. Oh, he's going to be here all along. Want to also show Kyrie Thompson quickly. He was supposed to be on here tonight, but he had some stuff come up, so he will be back on very soon. Maybe next week, too, we even try to get someone else on to maybe dissect the Patriots stuff a little bit more and talk divisional round. But anyway, guys, another podcast in the bag. For McGarvin, I'm Griff. Once again, I'm going to say it. Thanks, Bill.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.